From KMUW Wichita.
From Toronto, Ontario.
And from Armilla, Spain.
This is You're Saying It Wrong. Let's talk words. Let's talk winning words as we try to define some of the words that won this year's National Spelling Bee. I'm Fletcher Powell, host and producer at KMUW in Wichita, Kansas. And joining me, of course, as they do every week, Kathy Petras and Ross Petras. Kathy Petras, at your home in Armilla, you have now entered and exited the chat here about six or seven times. So technologically, at least, things are going quite well for you this morning.
Oh, yeah. It's just a great day, isn't it, for that? Well, it's my fault. I upgraded to Windows 11. I was holding off for so long, and I finally upgraded. And you can see that I'm thrilled. I'm very, very thrilled. Let's not discuss it any further. Thank you.
Well, then, Ross Petras, hello. You're in your home in Toronto. Ross, technological wizard today, just took you one shot and you're in.
I know. Isn't that amazing?
It kind of is.
No,
actually,
I'm the famous one who always has to have my son, my wife, Kathy, someone help me with it, but I did it all by myself. I'm proud.
Someone else who should be proud is the winner of the Scripps Spelling Bee recently, Bruhat Soma, a 12-year-old from Florida, who did something honestly completely astounding. They made it to a spell off at the end. So sort of when they're running out of time and they need to wrap things up, they have the finalists, the only people left, spell as many words as they possibly can in 90 seconds. And what he did is absolutely incredible.
Bruette.
Bruette.
Adelantado.
Adelantado.
Hyperkeem.
Hyperkeme.
Bicellium.
Bisellium.
Mycteric.
Mycterc.
Endecha.
Endecha.
So what he did was he spelled 29 of those words correctly in 90 seconds. I don't think I could say 29 of those words in 90 seconds, let alone spell them.
Well, Fletcher, we're going to give you a little more time.
Oh, thanks. Good.
And we're going to go through these words. We're going to see if you remember how they were spelled. But then, since you're a lot older than that contestant, we're going to also see if you can give us the definition.
What?
How does that sound?
No! That sounds terrible.
It's an interesting little twist. Well, look, Fletcher, we have to remind you, you did mention several times that you were a champion speller back in the day. So we have to, like, up the ante.
Yeah, I was very good at getting second place year after year is what happened. So I wouldn't quite call myself a champion, but... Yeah, I was good at spelling. However, those words that he spelled, those aren't words that anybody knows. It's insane. And you want me to give you the definitions. So, yeah.
Actually, though, what we're going to also do, Fletcher, is a bunch of them. One wonderful thing about knowing ancient Greek and Latin are that you get a real knowledge of stupid, useless words that no one needs to know. So I was actually pleased. I got a few based on Latin.
You and did.
So
we've you also did decided very we're well, going to. Ross.
And what we're going to do, though, is we're going to deconstruct these words and figure out how to figure out weird, useless words whose definitions you don't really need to know, but why not?
I just want to throw in that I don't know Latin like Ross does or ancient Greek, but just because I know words, I was able to tease some of these out in my own slower, less scholastic way. Mm-hmm. So it's possible.
So now that we've told you how we did it, Fletcher, we're going to shame you and see if you can do it.
And we're not giving you sample sentences either, because that gives away too much.
Okay, the first word, bruette.
Bruette. Yeah, are you making me spell these two? Because this is going to be ridiculous.
Maybe we should, Ross. Maybe we should at least let him see the word. We don't want to shame him.
Okay.
Or do we?
Okay, bruette, yes.
I'll just give you a clue. Now, obviously, it looks pretty French, doesn't it?
Yeah, bruette.
Right.
Was that my clue?
Well, that was part of your clue.
I have an idea. I'll give him a clue. It's really, really not as hard as you might think.
Ooh. Wheelie, wheelie?
It wheelie.
Wheelie, wheelie.
So the way you said that, either I'm supposed to think something about a wheel or I'm supposed to...
Ooh.
Yeah, okay, all right. They're leaning in closer.
And they have a lot of ads for this now in Quebec, now that it's springtime.
Really?
Hmm. Yeah.
So wheels, brew a little. It's a little something.
Good. And in spring, you're getting the garden ready and you're moving dirt from here to there. What do you use?
Here we go. How about like a little wheelbarrow?
That's it. In French.
Gee, how'd you get it, Fletcher? We're impressed.
Now, here's the interesting thing. That's what it is in French. But in English, it actually has a definition as well. Mm-hmm. And it's basically a word that no one ever uses anymore. It was a small two-wheeled vehicle used for personal transportation in parts of Europe during the 16 and 1700s.
And this is different from a bicycle?
It's like those cars. It's like a cow car. It's those carts where a man's pulling it in front,
yeah,
right?
Like a two-wheel cart. Yeah.
Or a horse is pulling it.
Yeah.
Oh, interesting.
Yep. In Latin, it's a birota, which is a two-wheel cart. That's neither here nor there.
So. Well, it's cute. I like those being called bruettes, wheelbarrows. I think that's what I'm going to call them from now on.
Good.
And people will look oddly at you.
Well, I mean, I don't talk about wheelbarrows that often either, so.
Okay, next word. Adelantado. Adelantado.
Adelantado. The way Kathy's saying this makes me think maybe it's Spanish.
Good. This one I don't think you're going to get. None of it. We couldn't get it either. No way.
It's a pretty word.
This has something to do with moving quickly but fluidly.
Creative.
Yeah. if nothing else, that's what I've got. What is adelantado? Is this an adjective at least?
Mm-mm.
Oh.
It's a noun.
Kathy, do you experience these in everyday life there in Spain?
No, I do not.
Not at all.
Okay. I mean, I might have if I had lived in, you know, Middle Ages or maybe even through the 17th century, but now no. I'm younger than that. Okay, an adelantado actually means advanced, and it was a title for Spanish nobility.
Oh, really?
Yeah, who would get that? Mm-hmm. They were granted special rights. They had the right to become governors or justices, and then they got to conquer certain regions in exchange for funding and organizing. So you basically, the monarch would go, okay, you can become the governor, and then you conquer it, and it's yours.
You know what we should do? We should vote on these if these are useful in English now. Okay, why not? Because I think that is completely useless unless you're studying medieval or, you know, early modern Spain. I don't think we need to know this one. Do you agree or not?
No,
I don't. But I do like bruette, so I vote in favor of bruette.
I like that one, particularly if you're going to be in a French-speaking area. It's always good to know.
That's right.
So, Ross, they do call them they call the bruettes our wheelbarrows now?
Yeah, there's ads all over the place for them. Yeah.
Okay, because, I've only seen it when I looked it up. I only saw it as the old bruette, the cart. That's why I was curious.
On Facebook, bruettes on sale. You can get one for $185 Canadian. It's a really good one, they said.
I was going to say, that's kind of pricey.
It's a really good one. Yeah. Okay, the next one, I think I'm going to automatically vote this as completely useless unless you're studying.
Oh, wow. So Ross is voting a Greek word completely useless.
Well, you guessed it was Greek, which is good.
Yeah, I can do that much. But the word here is hyporkeme. Hyporkeme?
Yes, very
perfect.
Good.
Spelled hyporkheme. Unfortunately, I don't know much about Greek. I mean, I know hypo, H-Y-P-O, means like a dearth of, I guess. Like if,
but then you have Rahim, but you have which the, is hard to
yeah,
do.
Yeah, Rahim.
Which is not good. Yeah, which is not the right way to do
okay,
it.
Okay, so it's hypor, H-Y-P-O-R, and that's the first part, and then the last part is keem.
Actually, I'm going to quickly say this before I get boring. This is a really interesting word in the sense that the person who spelled it, the contestant did so correctly and realized it's O-R rather than E-R. You automatically would think it would be spelled H-Y-P-E-R.
Yeah.
But it's not because
it
has a prefix, which is H-U or who or oop, H-U-P, and then it's H-U-P or oop, and then orchema, which is a dance. And then Hipporchema is a type of Greek dance used in the worship of Apollo.
I think we should say exactly what it is, Russ. It's a lively kind of mimic dance.
Exactly.
It's comparable to the ritual crane dance.
But you think it'd be, yeah, I mean, thank you, you know. But that is, I mean, but the person obviously really studied on these things, because I would have automatically thought it would be hyperkeme.
Sure.
If I didn't know the Greek.
Say the word in Greek again.
Well, I'm going to say it in quite a quasi-modern, in really how they, it'd be Uperchema. I would say Uperchema in more modern Greek.
That's nice.
So the emphasis is not on the high.
It's Uperchema or Uporchema. They probably, because they always, I don't like how they do theoretically how the great ancient Greeks spoke, but they would go Uporchema would be in the classical pronunciation.
So the next time I have to describe a lively kind of mimic dance,
you got it.
One of those Apollonian things I often go to here in Spain, I'll remember this.
I think we can all agree, useless word for us to know. We don't need to unless we're studying ancient Greek.
You know, I like how it sounds in the Greek a whole lot more than I like hyperkeme, though. It sounds,
I hate hyperkeme.
Yeah, that doesn't sound good. It doesn't sound like a lively dance either.
No, it sounds more like a skin disease or something.
Yeah, it does.
To me, but... Yeah, it does. Oh my God, look at that hyperkeme you have. Yeah. Don't come near me. Okay. Now, the next word we're going with was the... This was a Greek word, right? Now, I think when you look at the next word, Fletcher.
Speaking of skin disease, this sounds actually like a bacteria or something. Bisellium, B-I-S-E-L-L-I-U-M. Two of something, two celliums.
Very good. And very good.
Yeah.
A cellium, though, let's say.
Don't focus on the last part of the cellium part.
Ah, so the celli?
Cella.
Cella. Two cellas.
Well, if you know Spanish now, here comes into play.
Yep.
Sala. Two rooms.
Silla.
Silla. Silla. I don't know silla.
It's two seats.
Two seats. Like when you're riding in a Miata or something, right?
Well, it's actually more from when you go to, when they had plays, they had, or you had a large stone chair that could seat two people.
Huh.
It was a big seat. And it was basically for war people as well. And it was basically a seat of honor in the theater. You got to sit there if you were a real biggie.
I have a question. Do either of you know, did they have cushions in these stone chairs?
Or I don't know. I've wondered about that because they're really hard. I know.
Yeah, that's what I was just thinking.
Do you remember, Kathy, we actually saw one years ago when you were kid. We were kids. We were in Egypt. We went with our parents to the Greco-Roman ruins, we called them. They were like an old Greek city in the desert. And we went to an orchestra. Basically, you could see like this old, you know, theater. And they had they had it in Greek written on the chair, like reserved for, you know, whatever. It was really cool.
I don't remember. I just remember the dogs were scary.
They were. They had wild dogs in that area. They were very scary.
Okay.
Next up is Mycteric. M-Y-C-T-E-R-I-C. Oh. Where's this? What language is this one from?
What does it look like with the M-Y-C?
I mean, I don't know if it's Latin or Greek. Sometimes I can't tell which it's supposed to be.
It's the latter.
Okay, this one's Greek also.
Yeah.
How about a little hint?
Let's put it this way. A doctor who specializes in the head, in certain areas of the head, might use this word for you.
Like the jaw or the mouth? Like no, wait, that's urination. Never mind.
Okay, but wait. That's good. That's close, though. You said urination. The body also produces something else in the upper part. It doesn't urinate from the upper part. It does something else in the upper part.
He knows.
Saliva.
What it means.
Oh, mucus.
Yes.
Okay.
Although Mycteric isn't really, it's relating to the nasal cavities.
Okay. Now, but it's related to. I mean, it's related to the word mucus.
Yes, okay. It is. The ancient Greek is related to that, yes.
Huh.
And then the adjective, the ick part, is obviously the, you know, formation in you know, from English, you know, I see, relating to.
Of the.
So it's mycter, and then the English ick. So it's mycter, ick.
Mm-hmm. So like an ENT would deal with mycteric issues.
Yes.
Interesting.
I would rate this quasi necessary.
Well, I think
not
if
really.
You're in the medical field,
yeah, I'm wondering.
This is good.
I wonder if this is a word that's still used in the medical field.
I'm looking it up right now as we say that.
Okay, in the meantime, I'll move on to the next one.
Yeah, so this one, I think I recall from that clip how this one's pronounced. I certainly, if I just saw the word, I would have not pronounced it this way. It's spelled E-N-D-E-C-H-A. I think they said it was Endecha. Is that what it was?
Yes.
Okay.
Yes.
And you were about to say C. I don't know if that's because Endecha is related to Spanish or because you're just always...
I didn't even know I did that. I'm sorry. But C, it is.
Yeah. I kind of thought it might be... and Endecha kind of sounds like a little animal, but I don't think that's what it is. It also kind of sounds like some kind of weather phenomenon.
No.
No? I'm not anywhere close?
No.
Help me tease this out.
It's going back. This is similar to that lively mimic dance we had in Greece. This is a short, mournful Spanish song or poem.
Oh.
It's a quatrain, 4 lines, 6 or 7 syllables, with a rhyme scheme of A-B-C-B.
Ooh.
7 syllables for lines 1, 2, and 3. Line 4, I always love these formulas for stuff. Line 4 has 11 syllables.
Well, I'm going to cut in with a news flash on McTerrick. It does exist in extremely complicated prevalence of beta-lactamase non-producing ampicillin. Following McTerrick swabs of children.
Oh, okay.
And then another one with shrinking McTerrick and nasopharyngeal mucosae and nasal concha with cotton slice sodden normal saline solution.
Oh, this is making
solution.
My nose get clogged.
So it does exist. I think it's like a moderately useful word if you're a doctor. That's fine.
Yeah.
But I don't think your average person needs to know it. And I have the same thing with Endecha. If you're interested in mournful Spanish songs and poetry, fine. Otherwise, I think you can live happily never knowing what it meant.
Yeah, but it's kind of a cool word. I think it's neat. I like the word.
Okay, you can write one now. Remember, 7 syllables per line, 1, 2, and 3, 11 syllables for line 4. Next time we talk, I expect one.
The next word is nyctalopia.
Yeah.
Is that how it's pronounced? Or is it nyctalopia?
Correct.
Okay.
No, nyctalopia.
Nyctalopia. Right. Mm-hmm. No, that doesn't have anything to do with sleep. That's narco. What's nycta? It sounds familiar.
We're getting close when you said the other one.
Sleep? Really? Narco?
Sort of close there. What do you do? When do you do your narco?
Oh, at night. Yeah, okay.
Ah, good.
Oh, wait a second. What about the opia part? Now, when you're nearsighted.
Oh, myopia.
Ah!
Oh, so is this when you can see really well at night?
Mm.
When you see very poorly at night, like I am?
Yes! You got it! Yes! Excellent! Yeah. Excellent!
Sha-sha!
Perfect!
I'm starting to experience that more and more as I get older. Nyctalopia. Ah, nyctalopia. That's good. I like that one. I'm going to start using that one.
I like that word. Mm-hmm. I like that word, actually.
I think that's a good one. I say we keep it. I like it.
I like it too.
And I'd like to also point out that if you have vitamin A deficiency, you're more prone to nyctalopia.
Oh.
So eat your carrots. Okay, this one, Fletcher, do you know that? I mean, I've seen this everywhere.
What?
This word. This next word.
Ashwagandha?
Yeah, have you or not?
I have not seen this word everywhere. No, I have not.
Okay, Kathy and I both go to health food stores, I guess, and we see it there.
Yeah, that's right.
Because we both had no idea what it was. We both have seen the word.
We've seen it, yes.
Yeah.
So ashwagandha, is this some kind of herb?
In effect. I mean, it's not an herb qua herb, but it's a supplement.
A supplement.
Yeah.
Okay, really. Ashwagandha. And
it is in health food stores, and it's apparently from Indian, it's an Indian supplement, and it's winter cherry, an evergreen shrub that apparently, makes you more energetic. It reduces stress. It does all sorts of things. The cool thing about this one, though, I want to throw in, is it comes from two words, Sanskrit words, ashva and ganda. Ashva means horse, and ganda means smell, because the ground up root that you use.
Which really
means,
makes me want to take it.
I know. It means like it smells like a horse. It's like a horse-like odor.
Oh, wow.
Isn't that weird?
Yeah.
But the weirdest thing about this that really flipped me out was the Sanskrit word ashva, meaning horse, is, believe it or not, related to the Latin and the equus and equine. It has the same root, And it changed over the, remember we were talking about Proto-Indo-European, it changed over the years to equine or equus in Latin and then from there into English. But Sanskrit kept the older form, which is ashva. And it's incredible if that word were to be related. I had no idea that it'd be related.
Wow, not at all.
But ashva is a nice segue into the next word, which Kathy can read.
The next word? I think that Fletcher should read it.
Okay.
You said ashva is a nice segue into this one. So I can't remember how they said this one. He went so fast when he was spelling those words. I can't even remember how they pronounce them. Is it asham, A-S-C-H-A-M?
No, I cheated by saying okay. It's a segue. It's ask
that was really mean if you were.
I know, it's ask him.
Ask him?
Ask him again. Sorry. I also want to say there's no way you'll ever know what this means.
Oh.
Ever. So, I mean, I don't even think that we should ask him. I mean, no pun intended. Sorry. I really didn't mean it.
All right. Well, then why don't you just tell me?
Okay. Actually, it came from the name of Roger Ascham, English scholar and writer who tutored Queen Elizabeth I. And it is now, well, not now, it became used in the 1860s to mean a cupboard or case for storing bows and other archery equipment.
Oh.
And then the OED, the only thing they have of it is from 1860 in the writing of somebody, HD. Yeah. So, I mean, this is definitely not a word that any of us know.
Completely useless. And the next one is even worse. This one, it was interesting because we both had the same idea when we saw it. Can you see it, Fletcher? Pronounce it.
Yeah, Wenzel.
Okay.
You know, I've seen that as a last name. I mean, I've met some people with that last name.
He pronounced it Wenzel, which is, you know, probably because it's the German form.
Wenzel.
And Kathy and I both immediately started singing Good King Wenceslas.
King Wenceslas looked out.
Yeah.
One of our favorite Christmas songs. And that was about...
It is.
And that was about it, except that we found something saying it's a jack or a knave.
A Wenzel.
But I think that, like, Good King Wenceslas was good, so we had a debate about that. We could not find very much about this word.
It's just a name. Wenzel. Yeah. It's also used, it's a form of Vaclav, Wenzel, Vaclav.
I didn't know that either. The Vaclav part I didn't know.
Is it mostly just found as a person's name now, like a last name?
Yeah, that's all we could find.
Yeah.
Weird.
Except maybe it's some old form of knave or something like that, which seemed weird. But that was it. We could find almost nothing on it.
Mm-hmm.
The next word, Fletcher, is sagai. This was really cool.
This we figured out through just... deduction.
Did you really?
Yeah, this was really cool. Yeah, we were looking at it, and then Kathy said, let's let Fletcher first figure it out. I'll say what Kathy said.
Well, it has a lot of vowels. S-A-G-A-I-E. It's a cool looking word. You guys are really good if you figured that one out. Does it have something to do with the earth? Was Gaia G-A-I-A?
She was, and no.
And so it has nothing to do with that. Okay. Well,
I'm going to say something right here. Forget Greek and forget Latin.
Oh, my
Don't even
goodness.
Think of
that. Okay.
And just think what it sounds
it's
like.
It's heretical,
sagai.
But just forget them. Yeah.
It's a noun. It's a noun.
Uh-huh. A sagai.
Okay, say that again. You just said before, you said, it's a sagai.
That's exactly what happened. I said, Kathy, sagai. Kathy said, wait a minute. Assegai, is it related?
Assegai.
A what?
Assegai.
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 You've never seen the film Zulu?
No, I haven't actually.
We both saw Zulu a bunch of times. We both liked the movie.
Remember those like big spears?
Assegai is the hardwood spear or light javelin with iron used in southern Africa. And the Zulu warriors had it when they defeated the British.
Oh, wow.
And when they were fighting with the British. The British ended up winning for a while, but that's what it is. And it's related to that word. It means, the sagai itself means the tip of the javelin.
Huh. Fascinating. So what language is it from?
It's from the Arabic, right?
Yeah.
We
actually have some. We were in the Sudan. They're in the basement, actually. I have a whole bunch of them.
Oh, you still have them, Ross? The Sudan spears?
I still do, yeah. Yeah, they're Zagaya in Arabic. Zagaya in Arabic, actually.
Do you remember, I'll make it really quick, the time we were scared, we thought there was some in the house, we each took a spear.
Yes, I do. Just thinking of that. Yeah, we were alone in the house. We thought there was some burglar. So we took the Zagayas or whatever, and we're like, we're patrolling the house.
That's funny. It's interesting, Ross. I heard you say that you were in the Sudan. It's kind of betrays your own personal background.
Although in Arabic, it's also, it would be As-Sudan. So it would be the Al, which is elided to the S, would be As-Sudan.
Uh-huh.
So you're right, though. That's the old way of calling it. It's now Sudan, like the Ukraine, it's Ukraine, right. The Sudan, it's Sudan. You're right, Fletcher.
Okay, well, let's close out with one that is at least slightly like another word that I sort of kind of know. Okay, so we're going to go with Porphyrio, Porphyrio. I chose that because I know that porphyria is some kind of body disorder, some kind of, it's like a deficiency of something, and it causes all sorts of problems in your body. So I porphyria is a disorder that you can have.
Correct.
And so that's why I chose that. Now that's all I know.
You shouldn't have chosen it on that basis, okay, but go
right,
on.
Right. Well, I also kind of wanted to know more about that porphyria. You know, I wanted to know why porphyria is called porphyria. And so I'm hoping that some root of this word will help me to understand that. So this is why I chose it, I guess. To learn.
I'm just going to tell you what it is, what porphyrio is, and then we'll talk about the background, why it's connected with the other things. A porphyrio is a swamp hen, or the swamp hen bird genus in the rail family. And they're purpley, aren't they, Ross?
Yes.
The birds are purpley. Mm-hmm. Porphyria is when the body can't convert things that are called porphyrins into heme. And so it affects your skin, nervous system, heme, and gastrointestinal system.
But the one question I was having, I was looking that up, though, are the porphyrins or porphyrins, because porphyria goes from the Greek, which is purple. So I'm wondering, are these chemicals, does your body turn purple? I didn't know. I was
just
really curious.
Well, I'm assuming because it affects, you get red or brown urine. I'm looking this right. This is like medical hour today.
I know.
I was assuming because it's connected with your blood, red blood system, that it must.
So you turn purple? I guess you do.
I don't know. I've never had.
Or are porphyrins purple organic compounds? I don't know. You build up those porphyrins in your body.
You know what? If you Google porphyria, there's lots of pictures of people's hands with a bunch of spots on them that are pretty purpley.
Okay. Thank
you, Fletcher. The internet to the rescue.
Well, yeah.
And Fletcher.
And you know what? I think on this note, we're done with this. I'm going to throw in one word, and we're going to guess what it is. It is aposiopesis.
Aposiopesis.
That's good, Kathy. And it means suddenly breaking off in speech. And I think that's an appropriate way to end this before we talk about more medical disorders. So let's
stop right now or else.
Yes.
You're Saying It Wrong is part of the NPR network and is produced in the studios of KMUW in Wichita, Kansas by me, Fletcher Powell. Kathy Petrus records from her home in Armilla, Spain. Ross Petrus from his home in Toronto, Ontario, in Canada. Torin Anderson composed our theme music, and our digital team is Beth Golay, Kate Hutchins, and Carly Cooper. If you have a question for Kathy and Ross, you can email me at powell@kmuw.org or email them at kandrpetrus@gmail.com. You can find all of their books pretty much anywhere you get books, and a handful of them are also available on audiobook, read by the authors themselves. Thanks for joining us. We'll be back next week.
I'm Rachel Martin. You probably know how interview podcasts with famous people usually go. There's a host, a guest, and a light Q&A. But on Wildcard, we have ripped up the typical script. It's It's a new podcast from NPR where I invite actors, artists, and comedians to play a game using a special deck of cards to talk about some of life's biggest questions. Listen to Wildcard wherever you get your podcasts, only from NPR.